Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Syrian peace, tying up loose ends, focusing on what comes next for the embattled Arab Republic. The Ankara summit between the presidents of Russia, Iran, and Turkey aimed to tie up the loose ends of the Syrian conflict and advance a political solution to the long-running war. This gathering of some of the Mideast's most powerful figures was preceded by the completion of Turkey's military operation in Afrin and the liberation of Ghouta by the Syrian Arab Army. These unsynchronized but simultaneous developments drastically changed the state of affairs in the country, just as Daesh's official defeat did as well, which was announced by Russian Security Council Secretary Nikolai Patrushev on behalf of President Putin at the Moscow Conference on International Security that was held in the middle of this week. Despite the noticeable progress that's been made in the country, a few major obstacles to peace still remain, and those are principally the unresolved situations in and near the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights, the southeastern city of Al-Tanf, the so-called de-escalation zone in Idlib, and the Kurdish-American occupation zone in northeastern Syria. This latter part of the country has taken on particular prominence in recent days as Trump curiously signaled to the world that he was contemplating a full-scale withdrawal from the region, but then later threw in a caveat that U.S. troops might remain if Saudi Arabia or someone else foots the bill for their deployment. Speaking of the kingdom, its Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman earlier announced that he acknowledges that President Assad will remain in office, but expressed hopes that he will distance himself from Iran in the future. Riyadh isn't the only regional power interested in the U.S. military presence in northeastern Syria, however, since France said it will deploy troops there in support of the Kurds, which could potentially lead to Paris replacing Washington if the U.S. wraps up its operations there, like Trump supposedly promised. Altogether, it's evident that the Syrian battle space is changing in both stabilizing and destabilizing ways. But the common thread connecting it all is that the anti-terrorist phase of the conflict is largely over. The future is always hard to predict, let alone when trying to prognosticate what's going to happen next in a dynamic war such as Syria's. But there's a high likelihood that the multipolar tripartite of Russia, Iran, and Turkey will jointly concentrate their efforts on implementing UNSC Resolution 2254's mandated constitutional reform in seeking the most peaceful solution for tying up the conflict's loose ends and bringing a sustainable peace to the Arab Republic.
Trendstorm.
Okay, folks, well, we see that the summit that just took place in Ankara was huge, as were the somewhat surprising announcements concerning Syria over the past week as well. So we're going to start off our conversation by speaking with Mr. Ray Hosseini. He's a half Iranian and half Japanese who was born during the 1979 revolution in Iran. Hi, Ray, and welcome to Trendstorm.
Hello.
Okay, Ray, Trump surprised everyone last week when he suddenly announced that he wants to pull American troops out of Syria, but how sincere do you think he was, and what could have motivated him to say this?
I think he was kind of sincere when he said it, but as always, his opinions are always different from the people who surround him, and I'm not sure how they're going to change the course of his actions in the future, because I don't think, even if he wants to do anything, I don't think they're going to let him to do anything, actually, if it's against their interests.
Who do you mean by they? Are you talking about the so-called deep state and the military and neoconservatives? Is that who you're referring to?
Yes, like military-industrial complex and all the people who have power over the government of the United States.
Okay, and what do you think it was that might have inspired Trump to even say this in the first place? I mean, given the fact that, as you're arguing, he might not have a lot of freedom of action in this regard, why do you think he said this? Was it maybe just to kind of build up his popularity after some scandals, appeal to his base, just to make news? What do you think was behind it?
I think maybe financial problems. I mean, it seems like he's accepting Saudi Arabia to pay for the troops in Syria, so maybe it was money first. I don't think he really cares about Syria anyway, so it must be some kind of internal issues with money and those things, I'd say.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly then, Ray, you're saying that because Trump is more of a businessman than a strategist, he's looking at this from a financial angle as opposed to a military angle then, right?
Yes. Also, I think that he tries to do good things. Like, you know, in North Korea, he's trying to meet the president, with North Korea. Well, I'm not sure if that's going to happen yet until it really happens. But there are things that I feel that he's trying to do the right thing sometimes, but he doesn't have the freedom to do so, I think, sometimes.
Okay, Ray, you know, earlier you spoke about Saudi Arabia and how Trump has implied that maybe Saudi Arabia could pay to keep the American troops in northeastern Syria. And this brings me around to wanting to ask you about the latest stunning declaration that came from Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. I mean, he reversed his country's longstanding policy towards Syria by acknowledging that President Assad will remain in office. So, Ray, what do you think he expects in return for this, and how will it affect the Syrian peace process?
He already mentioned that he wants President Assad to cut his ties with Iran. So it's kind of obvious that he wants to. First of all, I think he's declared this because maybe he's starting to realize that he cannot defeat Assad. So he's maybe decided to do something else about him, like offering to pay him billions of dollars, I think.
Yeah, it almost sounds like he's approaching this from a position of weakness then, but at the same time, though, he has a cunning plan in mind, because you brought up the Iranian angle here, where he would almost want to buy off President Assad to get him to cut ties with Iran then. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because he's realizing that he cannot defeat President Assad in the war. He's trying to buy him off. That's exactly what it is, I think.
Okay, and how successful do you think this will be, though? I know that Hezbollah's leader, Mr. Nasrallah, spoke about these secret meetings between Saudi and Syrian officials lately, and he said that Syria rejected any type of billion-dollar bribe to cut ties with Iran, but it seems like, you know, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman isn't giving up, and almost like, you know, he brought this up again, that he recognizes that President Assad will remain in office, almost to get Syria to reconsider. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's very smart of Syria to reject that, because if they accept it, I think it would be used as leverage in the future to pressure Syria into giving up lots of things that they don't want to give up, like chunks of their territories and their relation with Iran. And I mean, there are so many things that once they accept this money from Saudi Arabia, they'll be pressured into doing things in the future. So I think it was very smart of Syria not to reject it. Actually.
Right. These are some pretty good points, Ray. Well, another one of the three surprises that we saw this week concerning Syria is France announcing that it's deploying troops to northeastern Syria to support the Kurds. So, Ray, how much does this complicate the joint Russian, Iranian, and Turkish effort to bring peace to the country? And what can these three great powers do to prevent France's move from derailing their peace process?
I'm not sure how much difference it's going to make, because the U.S. is already there and the Kurds are already there. And I mean, I'm not sure how much difference France is going to make, unless the U.S. is really going to leave and France is going to replace the U.S. troops. But in that case, I mean, it's going to make the peace process very difficult, because it's a third of Syria that's going to be in between all the allies of Syria. So, I mean, it's a big problem for the peace process.
Yes, and Ray, you know, one of the themes of our ongoing conversation has been the motivation behind different countries' messages towards Syria, be it Trump's, Mohammed bin Salman's, or now Macron. So what do you think is motivating Macron to want to do this? I mean, as you argued, it might not really change that much. I mean, there's a chance it can, remains to be seen, but what do you think he had in mind when he decided to do this?
I think he was just trying to, protect the West's interests in Syria, I think. And that's all the, like, Israel and the US and the UK, they all have interests in Syria. And that's to balkanize Syria and to stop Iran and Syria cooperating with each other. And the northeastern Syria that they occupy, it's a huge chunk of Syria. And that's a big piece of the puzzle that Syria needs. So it's a big to prevent them from reuniting with Syria. It's a big move, I think, if you look at it like chess, it's a big move, and it's very problematic, I guess, for all the allies of Syria. So I think they're just trying to work for their own interests, I'd say. It's not to protect the Kurds or anything, because the Kurds are just tools in this scenario. And the Kurds are not even the majority in this part of the country, in many parts of this part that they're occupied.
Ray, this was an interesting conversation about the latest surprises in northeastern Syria and how they could influence the developing peace process. So thanks for coming on to Trendstorm today. I was very happy to host you.
Trendstorm.
Now we're going to hear what Mr. Smain Jella has to say. Smain is an assistant professor of political science and international relations at the University of Algeria. Okay, Smain, the French military deployment in northeastern Syria and Saudi Arabia's reported interest in maintaining the U.S. deployment there might deter Turkey from forcibly dislodging the pro-American Kurds. So how would the perpetuation of their quasi-independent statelet affect the peace process?
Deployment in northern Syria is a late operation. It will not change the actual events or the nature of geopolitical settlement. Also, France will not enter into direct conflict with the Turks. Both countries are members of collective defense treaty, I mean NATO, and their presence in Syria, according to international law, is an invasion. So there is no possibility that they will involve in a direct conflict beyond their borders. Maybe Macron's acts can be seen as nothing more than an enthusiasm of a young president who wants to confirm the French presence in the Middle East after the retreat of the United States. Another fact, I think, that France has always considered that the Mediterranean affairs are European affairs and the fate of Syria, Lebanon, Algeria is a French business. Now, the Western bloc is out and he lost all political and military influence. No Western bloc, namely Russia, Iran, and Turkey, are taking power on their own. The issue of the Kurds and the competition between France and Turkey is, from my perspective, an only minor issue of a general change in Western Turkey has emerged as a shift that France wants to recognize or to accept. I think France really plans to support the Kurdish group by political and intelligence means to ensure specific interests or to confirm, let me say, an Occidental presence in the region. But it seems like last the disparate act does. We see how Paris is quick to make statements against non-Western powers, such as the position against Russia on the Skripal case or its offensive comment on Iran.
Okay, well, you know what I want to ask you about, Smain, is, I mean, now we've been talking about the members of the pro-American coalition in Syria, and I want to discuss some of the issues between the members of the pro-Russian or the Russian-led coalition. I mean, we see that Russia supports the Kurds' inclusion in the peace process, but Turkey is opposed to this. At the same time, Russia is suggesting that Syria decentralize, though Damascus has a desire to retain a unitary state. So, Smain, how can each side find a common ground with the other concerning these two very important issues and forestall a growing strategic divergence between them?
The three powers, Russia, Iran, and Turkey, advocate preservation of Syrian territorial integrity. And in their media conference, the heads of the three countries made a clear statement of this issue. So Turkey has previously supported arms group to achieve an ambitious strategy, but now supports the preservation of Syrian unity. There is an important shift concerning the Kurds. It seems that disappointment is big. The Americans abandoned them. Their destination to France was a strategic mistake. It was better that they negotiate with the Syrian regime, especially since the course of events are not in their favor. Turkey's interest of the Kurds and their links with Western powers is mainly due to the weakness of Syrian state. Turkey has contributed through its previous policies to shaping this situation. Therefore, the path available to Turkey, which can be common ground with Russia and Iran, is to strengthen the dominance of Syrian central authority, the control of the national army on all regions, or to support the territorial integrity of Syria and the exit of all foreign forces after operation. Turkey-Russia relations have witnessed rapid development, and Erdogan's choice to announce the establishment of the nuclear project during the discussion last day of the future of the political process in Syria has great implication. Let affects the level of understanding between the two countries. In addition, I think Turkey has become confident in Russia's ability to negotiate with armed groups. For this reason, may Russia will be asked to deal with the Kurds. The Kurds are required to stop their alliance with the West and look to coordinate with Russia and the Syrian army.
Okay, Smin, so we just have about 1 minute left, so we're going to have to be pretty brief. The U.S. and its Israeli and Saudi allies want to contain Iran and Syria, while Iran and Syria are both opposing this, of course. At the same time, Russia and Turkey are taking a neutral position and don't want to get involved. So, Smin, given this context, what do you expect next in the intensifying proxy war between the two sides, and what influence can it have on the Syrian peace process? And we have about a minute left.
I believe that despite the declared relation between Saudi Arabia and Israel, this relationship will not materialize in form of military alliance against Iran within Syrian territory. From my perspective, this influence will be limited for many reasons. First, Saudi Arabia, in the eye of Muslims, is the center and land of Islam. They cannot empathize with any military relationship between the kingdom and Israel against Iran or any other country. It will favor Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, Qatar, Turkey after the shock by this normalization with Israel. Israel's opposition to Iran's role in the Middle East, it will not engage any declared or direct battle against Iran or Syria, be enemy on its border. Also, Israel knows that Iranian and Syrian strikes will destroy its civil and military infrastructure. Of its involvement in the Syrian war and the declared relation with any armed groups or political parties will strengthen and support the position of President Bashar al-Assad. So despite the crisis, the Arab national consciousness continues to be against Israel. For this reason, I think Israel refused from the beginning of events to declare any direct statement regarding to the development of peace process and Syrian and international negotiation. The military operation carried out by the Syrian army are coordinated with the allies like Russia, Iran, and Turkey. The cooperation in political and military issues according to agreed legal, technical, and tactical frameworks. The peace process is carried out through the agreement of these parties and through the guarantees they provide. Here, Israel, Saudi Arabia, or other powers cannot accuse Iran of exerting individual influence to determine the fate of the region.
Smin, thank you for sharing your deep analysis with us about the latest developments in Syria and the influence that these several interrelated factors might have on the country's peace process. So folks, if we reflect back on what both Ray and Smin share with us today, we can see that what's happening in Syria, it's certainly, everything is certainly taking on a new color. The war on terror is largely over. The peace process is beginning, but there are a couple roadblocks. Namely, what's going to happen next in the de-escalation zones, and especially the status of U.S. and now even French forces in northeastern Syria. And what's going to happen with the Kurds? How will they play into all of this? And how will Russia resolve its disagreements, if you will, with Turkey over their intended role in this peace process? Hopefully our conversation revealed more about this, and it helped to enlighten our audience about what can happen next. But folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kripko. Thank you for listening, and take care.